From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak, live in the studio. A chat with Jerry Brown is the first of three new conversations today. Then Lena Fatt, who is more of a pioneer than you might know. This is the 80th anniversary year of the famous Frank Fatt's restaurant in downtown Sacramento. Later, cancer biologist Dr. Michael Shepard describes the work of his team. They just won one of the highest science honors in the world. But back to Jerry Brown. The former governor was supposed to be in New York yesterday for Climate Week, but a last-minute personal matter apparently forced him to stay in California. He talked with Cap Radio's Ben Adler recently about the new California-China Climate Institute at UC Berkeley. He helped launch it.
It will work in partnership with similar disciplines and academics in Tsinghua University in Beijing. And the goal is to build on the work that California has been engaged in, I personally have been engaged in, and what continues. We're in the face of a demolition derby coming out of the Trump White House, eviscerating every clean air law in sight. And so it's particularly important that we mobilize an important set of constituencies and raise awareness.
I'm curious, which of these issues you think will be of greatest value to California learning from China, and which one's the other way around?
For China to continue and strengthen their requirements for electric cars, zero emission vehicles, as well as more renewable electricity, that helps the world, but it also helps California when Trump is trying to undermine our vehicle emission standards. It's very helpful to have the government of China, which has the biggest auto market on planet Earth, to follow and even exceed the California rules. That really is forcing the auto companies to sign up for California, because if they give in to Trump and go for more gas guzzlers, they're not going to sell their cars in 4 or 5 years.
Just to clarify for listeners, you mean make that deal that four automakers struck with California Air Resources Board about implementing Obama-era mandates on a slightly delayed timeline.
Right. And these mandates in Obama's time were formulated by California, by the Air Resources Board under Mary Nichols when I was governor. So, look, there's a global threat. There's a lot of action in Europe and China, California, New York, other states, but it's not nearly enough. And there are technical questions. We need continuing scientific research, how to implement a cap and trade program. China has not done it at the level of California. They got to audit emissions. We can be helpful. We've been doing that. We have third-party verification of all our audits of carbon emissions. And you got to know what's coming out of the tailpipe and the factory chimney if we're going to reduce it. So I think there's ways California can help. And China has far more money going into new battery technology that will make more electric cars possible, cheaper, go further. And also we'll be able to run more cities on wind and sun, because when the wind stops and the sun goes down, we'll have adequate storage, which we don't have today. And that takes billions and billions of very careful and productive research. We're doing some of that in Silicon Valley. We're doing some of that in other parts of the world. But China is virtually a leader, or close to being a leader. So I'm going to use my experience as a leader, political, governmental, to push these issues through this Climate Institute. And just like I'm doing in New York City with representatives of China, with representatives from our Under Two coalition, over 100 states, provinces around the world, we have to keep banging on the drum, because too many politicians are sound asleep. Too much focus on other issues that are very important, but climate is an overriding threat that we really need to deal with. And given the rising tension, animosity, competition with China and America, it's all the more important that California and China forge open communication, pathways of working together and dialogue, more important than ever.
Governor, I'd like to ask you about the widespread and even bipartisan questions over China sealing American research, trade secrets, intellectual property. You're inviting them onto the Cal Berkeley campus. You're giving them a foothold at one of the nation's most prestigious universities. Do you have any concerns that, that China might see this as a way to gain a competitive edge over not just the U.S. as a whole, but California in particular?
I'm not prepared to comment on Chinese violation of law, whether it be intellectual property or cyber rules. But I will tell you this, China is investing an enormous sum of money in storage technology, in renewable energy, in zero emission cars. And America has to, if we could outcompete the Chinese, hallelujah, all the better. And we want to almost engage in a holy competition to bring down the costs of renewable electricity, make our cars more efficient, cheaper, and that's good. There's plenty of issues between the U.S. and China, South China Sea, Taiwan, intellectual property, hacking, you name it. But climate change is not waiting for politicians to work out their various problems. And China is a major player, biggest polluter, biggest investor in renewable technology, and I think California can profit from partnering with them, and so can China profit from partnering with us. Yeah, there are issues. I'm sure we'll get into them and see them as we go along. But just sitting on the sidelines throwing rocks or issuing Trumpian tweets goes nowhere. We must roll up our sleeves, work with our Chinese partners, and really get a handle on what is a major threat to billions of people on this planet.
Now, word is coming, of course, from Washington that the Trump administration is preparing to revoke California's longstanding ability to set its own auto emission standards. This has been one of the relatively few issues that you've been vocal about in criticizing the president both as governor and since you've left office. So do you think California has a strong enough legal argument that it can win this battle with the newly formed U.S. Supreme Court?
Long before it gets to the Supreme Court, we will have engaged in years of litigation in the lower courts. Before it gets to the Supreme Court, we hope, I hope, that Trump will be gone. We'll have a more reasonable president who will reinvigorate the California waiver and even go further. Then the Supreme Court won't even be needed.
This issue, though, wasn't just President Trump trying to revoke the waiver. There was, of course, a battle during the George W. Bush administration that also was resolved, as you mentioned, through the election process rather than the legal process.
Yeah, this is the political process. The litigation is delaying. Delay through litigation, which we have a right to do, this awful stripping away of California's environmental authority. And during this period, of course, we'll elect another president. If Trump gets reelected, that is really bad news for the environment, for California, and for so many other things I hold dear.
We're also recording this interview on the day that UC President Janet Napolitano has announced she intends to retire next year. And I wondered if you could reflect on her for a bit, because the two of you worked well together at times and also kind of battled at times over tuition, over funding from the state for the university, and for your efforts to have the university reduce some of its overhead costs. So what are your thoughts as you reflect on Napolitano's tenure atop the university?
Well, I don't want to get into personalities. I would just say the university still has a long way to go to make itself more, I don't want to say efficient, but to lower its cost structure in a way that can keep student debt down and learn that they'll get some funding from the state, but they can't expect the state to underwrite everything that any of the professors want to do. A lot of that's good. We need more money in various areas of research. In fact, I would recommend California consider that, particularly in the climate area. But there's always a bit of tension with Sacramento, the state government, and UC. UC is one of the claimants, along with many others, for more money. And there's a limited amount, so you have to say no, you have to balance stuff out. That's what I did, and that creates a little bit of tension.
And if I could hazard another question, slightly off topic, but it is about money and it is about education. Lawmakers voted in recent weeks to place a $15 billion bond for school facilities at all levels, preschool, K through 12, community colleges, and the UC and CSU systems on the March 2020 ballot. There is also a water and wildfire resiliency bond in the works, potentially for the November ballot. You spent much of your governorship trying to pay down the state's bond debt. You were not a big fan of the school bond on the 2016 ballot. Are you concerned, without necessarily asking you to criticize Governor Newsom, who's taken over for you, and lawmakers, are you concerned about going down that path again of creating new bond debt?
I'm not specifically commenting on this bond issue, but I would say that whether it's pension debt or bonded indebtedness, those obligations have to be paid come hell or high water. And as the recession takes hold and tens of billions of dollars fail to materialize, other state programs like the university, like healthcare, like childcare will be squeezed. So it is absolutely imperative to scrutinize every long-term obligation with the clear awareness that the amount of money piling in today will not pile in at the same rate 2 years from now.
Lastly, of course, I should ask what else you're up to these days. We see periodic tweets. I don't know if they come from your fingers or a colleague of yours, but of you and of your dogs on the farm, on the ranch, in the golf cart.
That's not a golf cart. We call that a mule.
A mule.
Yes, it's a off-road vehicle that can climb hills very nicely. And a golf cart could not climb the hills of my ranch. And it would tip over.
But you are spending some of your time there. You're also, of course, involved with the, I believe it's the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and the Doomsday Clock. I guess a listener might just want to know how you're doing these days.
Well, I'm getting ready for my third olive harvest, which is the basis of our specialty brand Mountain House olive oil. And we'll have that in November.
Available in stores?
Well, not yet, but one never knows. So that's something. Then, of course, we're going to have to set the doomsday clock, 2 minutes to midnight now. We'll be meeting in November in Chicago with scientists to mull over, should we make it closer to midnight or keep it the same or maybe even pull it back? And lots of other things. Never a dull moment.
If I were to ask you what you missed about the governorship, you would probably give me a pithy answer. Let me try a slightly more pithy question of what don't you miss about being governor?
What don't I miss? It's a good question. I like my freedom. I enjoy being governor. And I didn't get too caught up in the banality of gubernatorial ceremony, but concentrated on interesting, substantive issues and working with a very extraordinary group of people, including leaders in the legislature.
That was former California Governor Jerry Brown talking with Cap Radio's Ben Adler. I always enjoy those conversations. That was recorded, by the way, as you may have gathered, before the Trump administration revoked the auto emissions waiver. And then after the interview last Friday, California and 22 other states, plus L.A. and New York City, sued the administration over the revoked auto emissions waiver.